So then let's just take a moment, and I invite everyone watching to this interview also to tune in together with Dieter and myself into the topic of our conversation, the Conscious Evolution Summit, and really take a moment to sense that we are not alone with this issue. This is really of global concern, and just be aware, you are not alone, and we together as a human family evolve, and we tap now together into this large field. And move through this conversation. And first of all, I want to give you a brief invitation and an introduction to my guest today. It's Dieter Langenegger. Dieter lives in Austria, but traveled around the world. And he is really a passionate purpose counselor and life mentor. He works with individuals, with entrepreneurs, with founders, with senior executives. His work really spreads and in different aspects and areas. And his passion is really to help people to find their real purpose and to live a life which they love. And as our whole evolution really is, if you would simplify it, is really a movement towards love, towards joy, but not just on the expenses of others or expenses of our environment or nature, but really taking into consideration all what surrounds us. I'm really happy to have you here today, Dieter, to our flow together.
My pleasure and my honor.
Yeah. And Dieter, before we go a bit more into details, what your work is about, maybe you can give us just a bit an understanding why you do what you do. So what brought you onto this path to be really so passionate about supporting other people, and just take us into your universe so that we can really get a taste of who you are and what brought you to this topic.
It's almost 40 years ago. Well, let me see, maybe first, I'm 64 already, and father of three and grandfather of five. And it's almost 40 years ago, right after university, when I started as what you would call nowadays a coach. The term didn't exist then, a coach for personal development. And after 2 or 3 years, some of my clients came up and said, Dieter, we like very much what you're doing, you know, with time management and communication skills and team building, all this soft stuff, so to speak. Can you go a little bit deeper? And then at the same time, by coincidence, and there are no coincidences in life, I met Viktor Frankl, a Holocaust survivor and the author of the book Man's Search for Living. And my mother introduced me to him, and he took me under his wings. And very soon he said to me, well, why don't you help your clients to find an answer to the simple basic question, which is, why are you really, really here on this planet? Besides to make money, besides to make career, besides to get recognition and maybe raise children. Why are you really, really here? And then I said, this is it. So ever since, I'm not doing anything else but helping people to find the purpose in life and how to live it. Mm-hmm. But it all started with both interest from my side in philosophy and psychology, as well as the coincidence of meeting, getting to know a little bit Viktor Frankl, and the demand by my clients who said, not just the superficial surface, let's go a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us a bit an understanding of what supports you and your clients to go into this inner search to find out what is it really why I'm here in this life?
Mm-hmm. Okay, very briefly, maybe just 2 minutes. The philosophical background, which I learned from Viktor Frankl. Imagine a line going from 0 to 100%, from failure to success. And the question Frankl always was asking is, how do most people measure their success in life? And usually you get a whole bunch of answers, but at the end of the day, it boils to up, be it money, be it car, be it house, you name it. And then Frankl always used to say that there's another axis going from fulfillment all the way down to depression. And then you have four quadrants. And the question we should ask ourselves is, in which one of the four quadrants are we? So we have from failure to success here and from fulfillment all the way down to depression. And where are we? And obviously number one, which is the upper right one, which is inner fulfillment and outside success, would be the nicest. Number four, which is neither nor, obviously would be the last one. Number three, Frank Lowe's a saying, which is outside poor but inside fulfillment. This is what he called the monks in the Himalaya mountains. Not necessarily our culture. We shouldn't imitate it. Maybe learn a little bit, but not imitate it, because it's a different culture. But the sad thing, he said, is that in our culture, most people are in the lower right quadrant, which is outside everything looks perfect, but inside it's the big black hole. And then to make things even worse, people are trying to compensate this inner black hole in the direction of depression by doing more on the success axis, which is more money, more cars, bigger house, you name it. And completely forgetting that at the end of the day, we need to find a balance between outer success and especially inner fulfillment, because this is where most people are really suffering. We probably don't have to be afraid of starving to death anymore, at least in the Western societies, but starving to death emotionally or spiritually, this is a real danger nowadays. So to find a balance between these two axes, this is the basic. And then to be a little bit more specific, and I always like to show pictures because this makes it a little bit easier to explain. Imagine a triangle consisting of three levels. The top level is called how, the middle level is called what, and the bottom level is called why. How, what, and why. How is how can I learn a language, how can I develop a new product, how can I, and then you fill in whatever it is. What is usually the material goals. What do I want to achieve in my life? And this is where most people stop. A whole lot of clients come to me and say, Dieter, I have tried this in my life, I have tried this in my life, and been 6 seconds crisscrossing around and maybe even been successful in material terms for a certain period of time. But then they say there's still something missing. What is it? Why is it? And then I always say, this is exactly the point. The why, because you have not found an answer to this question I was saying before. Why are you really, really here on this planet? And unless you have a profound answer to this question, it's very difficult, almost impossible, to find the proper what and how. We're trying, we're crisscrossing, but we still lack inner fulfillment. Mm-hmm. So this, in a nutshell, is the basic concept.
And would this mean, Dieter, in your perspective and also in your experience with clients, that to really take care of the why is basically the foundation, and is it the first step to check this before we look to the other two questions?
No. And this is what usually surprises my clients very much when they come and say, okay, Dieter, I got the message. Help me, support me to define my why. And I say, sure, pleasure. But we don't start with your why. And they say, what's going on now? And then I say, we have to go a little bit deeper than this. We have to go into the subconscious area. So for instance, just as an example, what fears, blocks, or concerns do we subconsciously have, which make it difficult, if not almost impossible, to creatively think about the why and then in the consequence about the what and the how. What are the fears, blocks, and concerns which are holding us back? Something we usually don't do. In school, we learn facts and figures, but we never learn about these inner topics. And therefore, we carry this with us subconsciously, and sometimes even deeper than this. And then we'll talk about why are you driven to do what you're doing? What are your core wounds, for instance, you want subconsciously to deal with? And if I may just give one or two examples, what I mean here is some 20 years ago or so, I was doing a program, a workshop in Switzerland for the board of directors of a rather well-known Swiss company, seven gentlemen. One of the exercises was that they should find an answer in writing for themselves to the following question. And the question was, and they were all 55 plus years of age, from what you have achieved in your life, who should see your success? And then these seven guys were writing down the answers. And in the coffee break and the dinner, they were coming to me one-to-one to share with me their personal, individual, unique answer. Problem was that five out of the seven told me they've been writing down their father. Even so, he maybe has been dead since many years, but they were working 40, 50 years, 70, 80 hours a week, heart attack, divorce, never time for the kids, only at the end of the day to be able to go to dad and to say, Daddy, have a look what I've achieved in my life. I'm a good boy, right? Look what I've been able to achieve. And if Daddy is there to say, he would have been proud if he would have still been around to see what I've achieved. Completely driven. A whole life subconsciously, and to become aware of this. And then hopefully to either say, yes, that's okay, or, well, maybe I have to change a little bit the direction in some ways. So this can be going all the way down here, deeper even than the fears and the blocks and the concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And then the why.
Mm-hmm. But what I get when I listen to you is, that we basically look to on our fears or on what is blocking us really with a broad lens, not just in regards of why I'm here. I it feels for me that I really open in general which kind of fears are running in my system. Do I get this right? Or
the fears this level is still general, as you're saying, and it's not specific to any specific topic. On the other hand, at the end of the day, I mean, sometimes people have 10 to 15, or I even have people with 20 plus fears within 15 minutes, just a list, yeah. But at the end of the day, it boils down to two, maximum three core fears. So most fears, if they're more than two or three, are just different variations of the basic fears. And then to see, okay, what is it? And there are special techniques. I usually apply something which is called the worst case scenario approach. But then it usually opens the door to go even deeper, as I was saying before, into the core wound and the emotional. And then this is really individually. What has happened in your childhood? What emotional woundings have you received? What belief did you create about yourself? Like, I'm not good enough, one of the most common beliefs. What strategy did you develop after this? Like, I have to be nice to other people first. I have to be tough. I have to learn. I have to show, prove something. And this strategy then is with us the whole life, subconsciously, like an autopilot.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, out of a few conversations before, Dieter, I know that how you understand the core wound is not only that it's something which was bad, that it was happening. You also have really a big value for the core wound. And might you just share with us your perspective on what gift also lies in it?
Mm. Well, this is actually the solution, so to speak, or the way how to deal with it. Because if we think about these topics, about what has happened to us in the past, most of us, and also in the traditional philosophy of psychoanalysis, and I'm Viennese, I was born about 200 meters away from the house of Sigmund Freud, so I'm allowed to say it. The traditional way is to see, okay, there was a wounding, and now I'm overdoing it a little bit now, put in the finger and really let's see what has been the pain. And over time, it will solve itself a little bit black and white. What would be a much less painful and much more effective way to deal is to say, okay, what was the emotional wounding? For instance, my father is saying, why don't you know this? Why don't you know that? Or my mother is saying, you have to be nice to other people. And they usually do it subconsciously. It's no bad intention. Or something is happening, like my grandmother is dying, or my parents get divorced, whatever there is. And then, as I was saying before, we create this belief. And then we have one wish, which is to make sure that this emotional wounding never, ever will happen to us again in our lives. Therefore, we create a strategy, which is to avoid that it's going to happen again. The thing is, when we go the traditional way, we say, okay, this was bad, so forget about it. And I'm saying no, because all these strategies helped us to develop skills, abilities we would never have been able to learn if it would not have been for the emotional wounding. If I give you a personal example, my parents were divorced. I had a younger brother. And for my brother and also for my mother, I was a kind of father replacement for my brother. When my father was visiting us once or twice a year for a few days, all of a sudden, I was not number one for my mother anymore. I only was number two. So as a child, I thought, okay, I'm not good enough. Okay, so my strategy I developed was I have to be nice. I have to help my mother. Okay, and my mother every Wednesday had a circle of friends who were talking about philosophy and psychology. And at the age of 10 approximately, I started to help her to prepare the table. Of course, only to be told by her, nice boy, good boy. At the age of 12 or so, I started to sit in and listen to the conversations of the adults. At the age of 14, 15, I started to participate in these conversations. At the age of 17, 18, I had a knowledge of psychology and philosophy you normally would not have in this age. It was only because of this core wounds. It was a core gift at the end. And then when I started my profession, at the age of 30 approximately, a client was coming in saying, Dieter, this sounds interesting. Can you make a speech about this in our company? I said, sure. How many people will there be? He said, well, not too many, about 200. It was almost, I not only learned to do presentations, for 5, 6 years or 7 years almost, I was teaching presentation techniques. And if you tell me today, Dieter, tomorrow you have to give a speech in front of 1,000 people, I love it. I would never have learned it. It would have not been for the core wound and for the need to be nice and to get attention, positive feedback. So it's not just a wound, it is gifts, it's skills, it's things we have learned, we would never have learned if it would not have been for the core wounds. And when people become aware of this, it is like, oh, wow. And then the next step in the definition of the why will be, how can you make use of all these skills, of all these abilities you have learned? So make the best in a positive way out of what has happened to us in the past in a subconscious way.
Mm-hmm. So is it then always that you, with your clients, when you go with them onto the journey to find out their purpose, do you always visit the core wound and to get a basic understanding and awareness of it? Is this kind of needed or is it just in some cases?
Yes, I give an Austrian answer, yes and no. It's not straight like this. It usually happens that in the first round, people deal with the fears and they make a first draft definition of the why. And then they sometimes come and say, Dieter, I'm not so sure. I have some doubts about the why. Let me give an example, if I may. Some 4 or 5 years ago, I had an Italian client, and she had defined, to make it as short as possible, that she wants to do some cosmetic products without animal testing. And then 2, 3 months afterwards, she came back to me and said, Dieter, we have to redefine my purpose. I said, why? It can't be my purpose. Why not? I don't get started. I'm procrastinating, which usually is a sign that there's something wrong. I said, okay, are you afraid of something? She said, oh, yes, a whole lot of things. I said, okay, what's the biggest fear you have? And she said, my partner doesn't know about it yet. I said, okay, what would be the worst thing if you would tell him? Well, he might not like the idea. What's the worst thing that can happen if he doesn't like the idea? Well, we might have some discussions. What's the worst thing that can happen if you have some discussions? And again, to make a long story short, she said, he might leave me. What's the worst thing that can happen if he leaves you? She thought for a second, a smile came on her face, and being Italian, she said, to hell with him. If he doesn't support me, he's not the right guy anyway. Simple example. Yeah? And a little bit of, but this is what happens very often, that we realize it's not a problem. And then we go back to the definition of why. And then it's a circle. And then maybe next time this, it's still not perfect. And then maybe we have to go deeper. So it's like peeling an onion, so to speak, defining the why, going double checking it, so to speak, going deeper, redefining, going deeper again. So back to your questions, yes, it is going to the core wound. There are very few people who already have done it. Then it's just double checking if there's a blind spot left. But usually, yes, it has. It's worthwhile to go deeper and to see: are you living your own dreams, or are you still planning to live the dreams of others?
Mm-hmm.
What are your real dreams?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, when I listen to you, what I also get is that the whole process, this process of becoming more and more aware, is really also an expansion process where mm-hmm. I get to know myself in different levels, areas. You mentioned, of course, also really my internal areas, realms, where we in modern civilization tend to not look as close as it might really be of service for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, I just have a bit of, I just say it honestly, there is a bit of pain when I hear it's just in life, it's about that I do what I love and what I like. I mean, on one hand, it sounds nice, but on the other hand, I guess many, many people do that, and we kind of destroy our planet with this.
Absolutely.
I just care that I have a nice life.
Yeah.
How do you take this also into consideration, that it's, of course, how we contribute and how we live our life is about being really enjoying what we do and what we are and being really open and soft with it. But on the other hand, we don't want to kind of overstep others or environment or nature. Is this also part of your, when you look or when you take people on the journey?
Mm. At the end of the day, this is exactly what it's all about. And it's based on the old Japanese principle, you may have heard about it, called Ikigai, which is in the original form consisting of three overlapping circles, sometimes even four. And I will explain it in a second. And just that there will be some, in my version, there are even two more circles, but that's a little bit later. The three main circles are the following. The first one is called passion. The second one is called talents. And the third one is called, what does the world around me need? In non-material terms. Passion, talents, what does the world around me need? Passion is obvious. What do I love to do? And this is where, unfortunately, nowadays, most people stop. I mean, you can read hundreds of books, if not thousands, live your passion and stuff like this. Talents, yes, but even in most Western cultures, we have, if I ask my clients, make a list of at least 10 talents of yours, they say, are you nuts? I'm glad if I find two or three. We don't want to be show off. So most people have a difficult time to find and to say, okay, yes, I have talents in this and this and this. And very few people go to the third circle, which is the most important one, which is, what does the world around me need? And I'm not talking about in big terms necessarily. I'm talking in the world around me. Sometimes at universities I'm doing workshops, and it happens almost all the time that the young students, 20, 25, saying, yes, yeah, we want to make the world a better place. We want to change the world. And then I always ask them, okay, sounds good. By the way, what's the name of your neighbor? I don't know, but I want to make the world a better place. Okay, perfect. But what's the name of your neighbor? And they have to repeat the question two or three times before they get the message. I'm not talking about big scale, because in our societies, Western societies especially, we believe purpose must be earth-shattering. It must be really big. It must become famous and so on. I say, no, no, no. And I always suggest, for this third circle especially, to use what I call the Mother Teresa approach. What's the Mother Teresa approach? Since you've been to India a lot of times, this might sound a little bit familiar. What was the marketing plan for Mother Teresa when she started? She didn't have one. What was the budget when she started? She didn't have one. Did she plan to become world famous at the beginning? Probably not. Did she plan to become, to get the Peace Nobel Prize? For sure not. What was she doing? And I'm simplifying here. I'm aware of this. At the beginning, she was going out in Calcutta on the streets and holding the hands, so to speak, literally, of people dying on the streets to make sure they are not alone in the last hours of their lives. Nothing else. But it was her passion. It was a simple talent, but a very effective talent, and it was what a lot of people, still nowadays, unfortunately, do need, for instance, in areas like in India and Calcutta. So the most important circle is the third circle, small scale. Where do I see injustices in the world around me? Where do I see problems where I can contribute, not solve, contribute with my passion and my talents to help these people in their situations? The fourth circle might be then, but this is only might be, and maybe the world is prepared to pay for it. But this should not be the goal. Most people, most of my clients start doing, implementing the purpose in their spare time, in the part time, not planning to become a millionaire out of it. This would be definitely the wrong approach. But maybe later on, to make even a business out of it, or find a job with an NGO, whatever it might be, to make a living out of it.
That's interesting. So you basically encourage that people kind of apply what they find out about their talents and their contribution to be in service, really just on a few minutes, hours a week, kind of in their spare time?
To get started with. I have a client also in India, by the way. He's the managing director of a tobacco company. He's 36, 37 now. He doesn't smoke. He hates his job. He loves children. Now you might ask, what did he get with his career in the first place? Well, this is in India, and family pressure and so on. But anyway, he loves children. So he took the following decision. He says, there are a whole lot of NGOs in India dealing with orphan children. They have a big heart, as he says, but they don't have any idea about management and leadership. He likes children. He has a whole lot of experience in management and leadership. So his plan is, in 3 to 5 years, to start a consulting company specializing in leadership and management training for staff of NGOs dealing with orphan children. Why 3 to 5 years? That's for family and financial reasons. But instead of waiting until then, since last year, he and his wife, every Saturday afternoon, are going to an orphan home, playing with children there, doing the homework, and spending time with them. This year, he's doing a workshop for management staff of NGOs for free. He's telling them, look, it's a test balloon. I'm just trying it. You don't have to pay. So slowly, every year, he's doing a little bit more. And his plan is, in 3 to 5 years, then he either will have to look for a different job, and he's aware that he will get less income, but more fulfillment, most likely, and or start his own company specializing on using his passion, his talents, and what does the world need. Step by step, small scale.
Beautiful.
Much safer.
Beautiful. And Dieter, what I want to kind of go a little bit back, because I find this really interesting and worth having a more awareness onto that, is when you talked about talents. And I just assume that often when we look on the topic of talents, we often would look like as subjects in the school or really some skills. But talents, in my experience, often can be something really, really simple where you would have a hard time to see it because it's so much your nature. Maybe it was already your nature before you went to school.
Absolutely.
And I just want to hear from you, do you agree on that? And how do you kind of support people really to getting access to this often overlooked talents.
No, no. Again, I 100% agree. It all starts inside out. Most people, when they start to make a list of the talents, they start with outside skills, like I'm good in presentation techniques, or I'm good in writing books, I'm good in organizing events. This is something I hear very often. And they say, okay, let's make two categories, the outside talents or skills and the inside talents. And then people say, what do you mean with inside talents? Well, for instance, you know how to listen, you're empathic, you're patient, you ask questions rather than express your opinion right away, all these inner things. And this, again, is something which most people at the beginning find difficult, because as I was saying earlier, in school we learn material stuff, Paris is the capital of France and 2 + 2 = 4, but never about this inner stuff. And then I always tell them a kind of meditative approach. Just to simply sit down with a lot of clients, actually, but 40%, more than one third, at the beginning of a session, which is usually via Skype, we do meditation just to slow down a little bit and then to open up as well and to let all the answers, in this case, the talents, to come up. Because I firmly believe that all the answers are inside ourselves. Passion, talents, purpose, all is there. We simply have not learned to listen to ourselves. Sometimes I even tell them, especially for guys, for men who have difficulties to open up a little bit, and when they hear this the first time, they always go like this, to take a hot steam bath with candlelight, nice music, if needed, a glass of whatever, and just for 10 minutes. Not longer than this, because otherwise the water is getting cold. And just lay there and maybe even allow themselves to cry, which is very difficult for especially men. But to open up warm water, like in the womb of our mother, to open up. And then, for instance, in this case, with the talents, also to let it come out. Okay, yes, this is something I have as a talent. This is something I have as an inner talent. And then afterwards, and only afterwards, to continue with the list of outer skills. So definitely the inner part is the first part, is the most important part, and the least known part, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you said this is kind of, you have all of that information inside of you, but I can imagine that sometimes to receive feedback from my opposite conversation partner, they maybe can sometimes pinpoint the talents even better than I could do it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a very nice exercise, which I call the essence exercise, where, for instance, you write down for yourself, first and foremost, what is your essence, your aura, your personality. You also might apply it for talents, but usually I do it more than just talents. And then you ask 5, 6, 7 friends, family members, other people to do the same about you. What are your talents? What is your aura? What is your personality? Whatever the topic might be. And this, for almost everyone, is a wonderful, wonderful positive surprise, because as you just were saying, the others are able to give me a much better picture about myself, because we are too self-critical because of education and culture. And then they say, you're this. And then I always tell them, you've got 7 replies. Have a look if there are 2 or 3 of them are mentioning the same thing which you have, and you don't have it in your own list. And this might be a good indication that you didn't see it, you don't want to see it for whatever reason, but you should gratefully add it to your own list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another thing what I heard out of what you are sharing, Dieter, is that especially when you mentioned the story with this Indian man, kind of also being able to look at something really on a larger scale. I mean, looking really on a time frame of more years. And I guess also that sometimes, because some people think, oh, now I have my purpose and I know and that's it. But often in my experience, it's an from almost day to day, week to week, month to month, checking again and again and realigning, because there might be adjustments needed because of different circumstances, my inner development, outer changes. And can you maybe share a bit your experience with this?
Well, yes and no. Sometimes people ask me, for instance, if there's only one purpose in life, or if the purpose can change. And if the situation changes, if we have to adapt and so. And I really came to the conclusion there is only one underlying purpose. And there's one thing which we, in most cases, most languages, do not distinguish, which is the difference between the terms purpose and goals. Most people mean goals, even when they're talking about purpose. But for me, a goal is something I achieve or I reach at a certain point of time, while purpose is the underlying theme, the underlying mantra or motto, whatever you want to call it. And this usually is the same my whole life. Then the circumstances, so the why is the base. This is usually the same. Then the circumstances can change, the what and the how. I mean, my purpose, my why is to help other people to find the purpose and to live it. My what is, for instance, I do keynotes, I do one-to-one, I wrote a book 20 years ago and so on. And the how is, okay, how can I organize properly to have sessions with clients? I was doing seminars 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I don't do seminars anymore. Yeah, I do more one-to-one. So the what and the how can change according to the circumstances. But the why, the real why, usually stays. And I had a very interesting experience with mothers. Because when I was younger, a lot of mothers told me, no, Dieter, my purpose is my children. Mm-hmm. And later, when I got a little bit more experience in this, I asked them when they afterwards came to me when the children were 20 years or older and have left. And they said, okay, now let's define my purpose. That almost all cases, they told me, my goodness, it's the same thing as before I had children. It was just in a positive way interrupted by the 20 years of raising children. But the deep down purpose was there. And it's coming up again. It was just temporary, another more important purpose, but it's not the lifelong purpose, mm-hmm. necessarily.
Mm-hmm. And what is your experience in how does, or let's say, let's just see how I formulate that. Does purpose, to live my purpose, always mean that my professional life kind of also needs to reflect it? I mean, to find it out, you suggested to take private spaces, but at the end, does it always match with my profession, or can this be also different?
There are two options, basically. One option is, as we were saying before, that you find something which is really your purpose and you sooner or later fully do it, be it in an employment way or as a freelancer. The other way is that you say, okay, I do my, I was looking for the right word, not so nice 9-to-5 job, which I don't like, but I still do something in my spare time and get my fulfillment there. So there are both ways, and it depends whatever suits you better at the end of the day. And by the way, this is another way of how to check if someone's purpose is his or her real purpose. Because sometimes people are afraid, okay, is this the real purpose or what is it? And then there are a couple of test questions, and one of them is, for instance, imagine you still would have to do your hated 9-to-5 job. You still would not make a lot of money just to cover your basic living expenses. You would not get any positive feedback from your surrounding, your family, your friends. Would you still implement and live your purpose, yes or no? And if people say, well, under these circumstances, then it's probably not your real purpose. Because if it's your real purpose, these material things are still important, but they're not half as important. And if I can make a living, a reasonable living, but I can do what I really love to do, where I really can see a meaning, then you will do it.
And Dieter, we are coming to the end of our conversation. I have two things I want to have a look at. One is that you share a bit about your online course you just kind of created, but that maybe on the end. Before, I would also like to hear from you to maybe take us on a vision together. How would you imagine a world? How would it look like if people would take care and take time to find out about their purpose and would really apply it in their life? How would a world look like if on a large scale people would be interested in finding out and living it?
In a simple way, I had this conversation this morning actually with two ladies. I talked about this in a simple way, and I admit it in a philosophical way. It is that we come from the I philosophy to a we philosophy. That it's not egocentric, even less egoistic anymore. And it's not short term, that we are really seeing and behaving in a we philosophy. With other words, that we learn, we realize that knowledge, the outside world, if you remember this cross from Viktor Frankl, the outside is part of the game, no question about this, but it's not the only part. The other part is the inside part, which is probably much, much more important, because the outside world is always only a reflection of our inside world. And what we're missing, in my humble opinion, is we have a whole lot of knowledge, but we have very little wisdom in applying the knowledge. So if we know ourselves better, and if we know that we are not a single individual, we are part of a oneness, if you want to call it this way, that we move from the I to the we, then everything would look much, much nicer. If I may give you a picture example very quickly, and you probably have heard about this, it's the ocean, and there are two waves coming closer to the beach. And one wave shouts into the other wave, "My goodness, we're going to crash at the beach, we're going to die." And the other wave replying, "You're stupid, you're part of the ocean, you can't die." We see each other as wave, as I, and we are waves, but we forgot that we're also part of the ocean. And to have this we feeling, to go beyond, to first go inside ourselves, and then this way to go beyond ourselves, would bring in, I know it sounds a little bit theatrical, but an oceanic feeling.
Lovely. Thank you for sharing this vision. And I would say also a very real possibility with us. And I really deeply believe in the power of our common intention and our common belief, that when we really empower this vision, and I just assume that people which are listening to the Conscious Evolution Summit and our conversation now in particular are really able to hold this vision of a world which you just described, and together we can really make it more possible. And thank you for sharing your experience and your perspectives in really supporting people finding their life's purpose. And Dieter, at the end of our conversation, I just want to give you also the opportunity to introduce your online course just briefly, of course, and I will also share the details in the summit.
Well, very briefly indeed. It's just that I'm turning 65 this year, and there are simply too many people either who want to do one-to-one or who say, "I have heard about you, but I'm not sure yet." So that's why I created this online Purpose Academy. And the first course, which usually takes between 2 and 3 months, is about finding your purpose, living a life you love. And it basically goes through all the exercises, and there will be a community for people once a week to share, and I will participate in this online community as well, so people can get a taste of how it's working and if it's of interest for them. And if someone really wants to go deeper and do one-to-one, then he or she can simply apply to it. But it's basically for people who have never been really thinking about that there's a possibility to do something about it, to see, yes, it does work and that might be helpful. And yes, I can do something about it, to get a feeling for it.
Thank you so much, Dieter. I really enjoyed our time together. I really appreciate that you took your time to be part of this year's Conscious Evolution Summit. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you for having me, Puria. It was a pleasure.